Hey everyone, welcome to Phil Goes to Camp. I am the titular Phil, and the titular camp is Camp Crystal Lake, home turf of one Jason Voorhees. If you're new here, I am watching the Friday the 13th series of movies for the first time in my life. Also, if you're new here, please peruse our back catalog of regular episodes. My son Austin and I have over 100 in-depth movie reviews and conversations in our archives. Please go check those out. Today I'm talking about Friday the 13th, A New Beginning. That is its title on IMDb, and this title marks the first time in the series where the naming convention has been the same for two consecutive movies. It ditches the numbering and just has the subtitles, or the subtitle. That is the official name of this movie, but alternative names, as they are shown, especially on all the posters and marketing materials for this, is Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning, which combines the Roman numerals of Part 3 with the subtitle of Part 4. It's a whole new level of inconsistency by having inconsistent titles for the same movie. This is leveling up in its inconsistency. And it's also staying on brand with the inconsistency of the franchise. When you look at the wavering quality of these movies, we are back down after Part 4, which I enjoyed, as well as Part 2. This is following, I made the joke last time about the Star Trek levels of quality, where the even-numbered Star Trek movies are considered the good ones and the odd ones are the bad ones. This is following exactly in that pattern. 1, 3, and 5 have been the biggest chore for me. Part 5, this one, A New Beginning, has been the worst one so far. The big sin of Part 1 is that it's largely very boring. It's not very well acted, and the twist really wasn't a big surprise, and I honestly don't know if that's because I already knew what it was or because it's telegraphed. I don't really care because I didn't really care for that movie. Part 3 was full of gimmicks, the 3D thing, and the unlikable cast that were not fun to spend time with. But Part 5 is the worst because it combines both of those things. It's not exciting at all. It's largely very boring because the scares aren't scary. The lead up to the kills isn't suspenseful. And most of the characters just have no personality at all. Or, the flip side of that, they're such a huge personality that they are a caricature of an actual human being. You can't even begin to take it seriously. Everything is either flatlined or so over the top that it's ridiculous, and not in a fun way. It's just like, there are characters who are supposed to be comic relief that aren't funny. They're more annoying because they're so big. And I think there are a couple exceptions to this. One of them is Jake. He's the patient on the I'm not even sure what it is. It's a camp. It's a mental health facility. It's a working farm. I'm not sure. Anyway, Jake is the patient who stammers and just seems to be sort of a mild-mannered character. He's actually playing it pretty even compared to everyone else in this movie. And Reggie, who's the kid who's always hanging around because his grandpa works there. And I would say Tommy is potentially interesting, but mostly he's not. I don't know. I feel like this is a big drop-off. They played Tommy sort of flat, and it was mostly to lead into the twist that wasn't a twist. I'll get into that in a minute. The quality of this movie is laughably bad. The script is not good. The dialogue is laughable. And there are some shots that are just baffling to me. There's the neighbor lady who runs the farm and screams at her son, who is, I think, supposed to be some sort of terrible caricature of a mentally handicapped person. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on. It's borderline offensive at worst and just ridiculous at its best. I'm not sure how to explain it. But anyway, this neighbor lady is murdered and her head flops down into a pot of stew that she's making. And then it cuts to her hand, which tenses up as she's killed and crushes a tomato in it. And then it's supposed to be her hand relaxing after she's fully dead, but it doesn't just relax. It fully extends the fingers. It's actually a muscle reaction in the opposite way. And the tomato falls out of her hand. And then her whole arm moves as though it's trying to hit a mark so it can be centered in the frame the way it's supposed to be. It's insane. A dead woman's arm moves after she's supposed to be dead. And that shot made its way into the movie. It's like they were sitting there going, oh, it moved after the fact. Should we shoot that again? No. We don't have the tomato budget to do another take. Let's just print it and move on. It's so baffling when something clearly could use another take and they don't do it. They just put it in the movie and call it good enough. It's lazy. Spoiler alert for my next point here. So spoiler alert on the almost 40-year-old movie. Outside of dream sequences, Jason Voorhees is not in this movie. The killer is someone else, and that's my big problem with it. Not that it's not Jason, but the way they handle it not being Jason. Tommy Jarvis is set up to be the revealed killer. We're made to think that Tommy is killing all these people, picking up Jason's mantle and moving forward with it, which, you know, it's telegraphed all through it. So you're like, oh, twist ending. It's not going to be a twist. Who cares? You know, they really stress that it's Tommy, which is potentially interesting, but I'll get to that in a minute. I mean, they go as far as to when they finally show the killer his full body with a hockey mask on, it's a small, scrawny guy in a hockey mask. So it's really leaning in on this is Tommy, because you know it's not Jason, because Jason's big. Yeah. He's not small. No. Tommy is small. He's a small kind of like late teenage kid, I guess. 18, maybe. 17, 18. But Tommy's small, so they're leaning into the red herring that it is Tommy. Then Tommy shows up to save the day and defeat the killer, who is revealed to be the paramedic who has just shown up sporadically through the movie. And then they're like given this paper thin reason that it's him. Anyway, it's such a weird sort of red herring that really serves nothing. Then I think this is the worst part of it. At the very end, Tommy's in the hospital after saving Reggie and what's her name? Pam? Dawn? Mrs. Dash? Some kitchen product. Tommy's in the hospital, and he puts on the hockey mask that, for some reason, is in his hospital room. And then he moves to murder Pam. I think her name's Pam. The final girl in this movie. He moves to murder her as it... So it is like this movie wants to have it both ways. It is Tommy, Then it's not Tommy. Haha, fooled you with the plot twist. And then, oh, yeah, it is Tommy. It's not Tommy and it is Tommy at the same time. It's lazy. It's stupid. It's a way of creating tension where your script has no tension. And I just think it's a whole gotcha. I fooled you, audience. You're stupid. And we're a smart movie, but you're not a smart movie. There's a way to handle all of this that could have been really, really interesting, where Tommy does take up the mantle of Jason and move forward as a copycat killer. The last Halloween movie, the Blumhouse Halloween movies, did something really similar. And it was one of the most interesting ways to take a horror franchise that is deep into the tall grass. You know, you can't do much to mix it up. But you can, if you really want to, you can take it in that direction and do something interesting with it. I loved what Blumhouse did with that final Halloween movie. I know a lot of people, it was controversial. A lot of people didn't like it because Michael Myers is not in it as much. But that movie had the guts to commit to that and move forward. This movie did not have the guts to commit to that idea. And as a result, it's not interesting. The most interesting thing that happens in this movie is two characters who are unrelated to the mass serial killings in this movie. One of them murders the other one, like 10 minutes into the movie, murders him with an axe, just chops him up. Just out of nowhere. It just almost spontaneously happens after almost no provocation. You know, it's so wild. And it was one of those things that makes me go, oh, this movie's going to be crazy. This movie's really going to be great. And no, it was totally wrong. That was the most interesting thing that happened in this movie, period. Everything else was nonsense. On the plus side of this movie, it did star the guy who played the guy who gave Indiana Jones his hat at the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That dude, who I tried to place the entire time I was watching this movie, what movie do I know this guy from? And of course, that's it. There's also a kill that is maybe one of the best kills in the series, and it is the neighbor lady's son, who is throwing a tantrum by riding his dirt bike around their yard, just full throttle, doing dirt bike stunts for like almost a full 5 minutes. And then he is abruptly decapitated by a meat cleaver. 5-star kill. It's wonderful. That's all I have to say on this. Those are the best points of this movie, is the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade guy and dirt bike stunt decapitation. Other than that, this entire movie is a squandered opportunity to do something interesting. But I guess that's what you get when you bring on a porno director to make your slasher movie. And, you know, it kind of shows. This is garbage. We'll see what the next installment brings if they really do take Tommy forward. Spoiler alert, I know they don't. Yeah, at this point, this is a low point of the franchise. I don't know what to expect. I'm hoping for an even number movie boost in quality and that I am entertained by part 6 or however they title it. Anyway, reporting from Camp Crystal Lake, located on the fraying edge of my sanity, this is Phil, and I will talk to you next time.